You haven't gotten completely away from the bizarre, however, in that you've been investigating the flying saucer thing, I believe.
Yes, I've been interested in the field, though, I guess, for about 4 years. I don't know, on the West Coast here, Ben, if you ever heard of Howard Menger.
Howard Menger.
He was a rather famous contactee, and I've... on numerous occasions appeared with Long John Neb on WOR, who I understand is your counterpart or his counterpart on the West Coast.
I'm often told that. I've never heard Long John, but I'm looking forward to hearing him.
Yeah, well, he's a grand guy personally, and he's done a terrific amount of sorcery because he's popularized it in the East. And I don't know if you fall in the same classification on the West Coast. But speaking of brain picking, I'm sure there's a little more meat on your side of the microphone, so how about my picking yours a bit?
All right. By the way, you said you wanted a drink of water, I think. Would you like coffee, or did you really mean water?
I really meant water.
We've got it. We've got the best.
Yeah, I have scotch. Oh, I should follow.
You have the scotch.
That's not against the rules in California, is it?
I see. Well, Anonymous there will get you a glass of Sparkles, which is the very best. Now, what did you want to pick my brains about?
Well, yeah, I'm very interested in your experiences in your various, as I understand, interviews on the coast here with the flying saucer groups. I hate that word, by the way, flying saucer, the UFO groups. And particularly, my hobby has been contactees and, to a certain extent, as much as possible, debunking them. I was wondering about how many of the contactees have you interviewed out here, then?
Oh, Jules, I'm just trying to remember. I keep thinking I've talked to all of them, and every time I think I've talked to all of them, a new one crops up, you know. But just to name a few, my favorite interviewee in that field, incidentally, is Dan Fry. Have you ever talked with Dan Fry?
Yeah, Dan and I are on a program with Long John, and George Van Tassel was on the same time. Oh, that was actually June 57.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very hot one, by the way.
Well, I've talked with Dan any number of times. I like to talk with him because he makes more sense than most of them, and he knows his stuff on rocketry and that sort of thing as nearly as I can tell.
Well, maybe you're better qualified than I am in that field, Ben. When they start going to scientific talk, it's all a meaningless jargon to me, and they could be double-talking from sun up until sundown. I couldn't tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
But well, if you know rocketry...
I don't either. But I have had Dan on the program when we had with him people who did. And although the other people on the program disagreed completely with the premise that he had flown in a flying saucer, they did say that the guy made sense when he talked about rocketry and missiles and space flight and that sort of thing.
I don't doubt his IQ, but I have a few doubts, to speak mildly, about his story of the White Sands incident.
Yes, well...
I just learned tonight, by the way, that it is now Dr. Fry.
He has received, he says, an honorary Ph.D. from some group in England as a result of... which is awarded to him for some one of the books that he has published.
The Divine College of Metaphysics, no doubt?
Something. That isn't the name of the outfit, but it is. It's a church type of doctorate, I think.
I know. I just found that out a few moments ago. I was making a tape with Gabriel Green for Party Line with Long John in New York, and he was telling me that it was Dr. Fry now.
Mm-hmm.
And oddly enough, in my conversation with Gabriel, whom I found a most affable and pleasant young man, and with whom I disagree 102%, they're talking about one factor that struck me as a bit of an anomaly. That is that here is, I don't know, I guess you hear in the contactees here that the space brethren decline, probably atomic warfare, hydrogen bomb in the least. Well, I understand, actually, that Dr. Fry has been making parts for missiles. And I'm afraid that he's going to give them the bad graces of the space brethren unless he desists.
Well, now, yeah, that's true. And, you know, you bring up a point that has often occurred to me. And that is that, of course, as loyal Americans, most of us are probably interested in seeing that our country's defense against any possible aggressor is maintained to the utmost degree until it no longer becomes necessary. And it seems to me also that if I were an enemy of this country and were trying to undermine it, I would find some pseudo legitimate way of getting to people to get them to agitate to let down their defenses. And it presents some possibilities that are a little alarming when you think about it.
Well, this strikes a familiar chord in my mind. And have you had Ivan Sanderson out here at all?
No, we haven't.
Well, Ivan has done a lot of radio and TV work, and one of his, he's a very well-versed ufologist, too, on the serious side.
Mm-hmm.
And Ivan has very often advanced the theory over the air and privately that it would be a wonderful way for the communists to put a representative in the guise of a man from another planet or another galaxy or what have you, to say, lay down your weapons, men. You must have peace. While the Russians, on the other hand, just get a few more bombs in the underground caves.
Yeah.
I personally don't subscribe to the theory.
I don't think that the UFO movement is communistic at all, but I do think that it presents possible fertile ground for communist work if they wanted to get into it.
Of course, I think you have to differentiate between the UF movement as such and the contactee group.
Yeah. Well, now, here's the way it boils down to me, and as long as you ask me, and then I would be very anxious to get your opinion and find out what you've discovered in all of your researching that you've been doing. I've interviewed all of the contactees, and find it awfully difficult to believe any of them, despite the fact that, without exception, the ones that I've interviewed all seem to be tremendously sincere, and they seem to be very pleasant, very likable people. And some of them, now like Dan Fry, for example, will take the attitude, well, if you don't want to believe me, don't believe me. I don't care. I know what I know, and if you don't believe it, that's up to you. And, of course, it's rather hard to combat an attitude like that. What can you say? And you eventually, in talking with all of these fellows, and I've talked with, in addition to Dan, I've talked to Van Tassel and John Otto and Dick Green as well. Have you met Dick Green yet?
Dick Green? No, I haven't. It's a new name to me.
Well, he's the one that started the Monka business out here on the West Coast.
Was that Miller or Green?
Oh, maybe it was Miller. Yes, it was. Excuse me. Miller. Dick Miller. Miller and, I don't know, so many of them over the years, I can't even recall all the names. And if you can question and question and doubt, and it always boils down to one thing. You've got to sit there and say, well, I don't believe you. You are not telling the truth. In which case, the answer is always to shrug and say, well, that's your opinion. And so how can you go anyplace from there?
Well, I think that is so true. I could tell you how this afternoon at 2 o'clock while I was driving down the Pasadena freeway that all of a sudden a saucer came right alongside of my car and there was an invisible ray lifted me out of the car. My wife Sue here took over the wheel. I took a short fly to the Aurora Borealis there. And the speed was so great I was back an hour enough to lose at 7 races at Santa Anita. Who can disprove it except by circumstantial evidence? And certainly here is where circumstantial evidence and the inherent improbability of the story comes to the fore, I think. Rarely can you catch a contactee in a direct fly, even though there have been cases when they get lost to their own web of fabrication.
Well, there is one other side to the picture, which is, I think, which makes intelligent people at least wait and look a little bit. And it is not so much the contactees. I'm willing to put them into maybe one or two categories. But it is the plethora of apparently reliable sightings from ordinary, normal sort of people. A case, for example, where a commercial airliner landed at LaGuardia a year or so ago. You doubtless will remember this. And the pilot and 43 passengers and all of the crew saw what they reported to be flying saucers. And you say, well, it's temperature inversion, it's hallucinations of one kind, it's meteors, it's one thing and another. And yet you ask yourself, how can a man with, say, 4,000 or 5,000 hours of flying look at a temperature inversion and not recognize it. And then, assuming that that one particular man did, there are so many, many other reports just from people who, for example, will call us on the beeper at night. There's one chap here, Dick Arant. Now, Dick is a friend of mine. He is was for many years organist, staff organist for CBS, and he's currently appearing in one of the nightclubs here in Los Angeles now. And Dick is a perfectly normal, sane individual who claims that he was flying in his airplane, his private plane, one day near Buena Park, which is where our KFI transmitter is. And suddenly, from out of the clouds, way up from nowhere, a light shone on the fuselage of his plane, just like a searchlight, as though it had been turned on. And he had a chap with him who saw the same thing. And the two of them were scared to death, and they landed. They looked up, and they couldn't see a darn thing up there except just this light coming down as though someone had turned a giant flashlight on their airplane. And they could see no source, no explanation for it, and it scared the dickens out of them, and they landed. Now, that's the end of the story. But there are a few things like that that occur from time to time, and they do make you wonder. As far as anyone being picked up in a flying saucer and taken for a ride, I think it's a wonderful way for people who need a little attention to get it.
Well, I certainly do not harbor any doubts that as far as the unidentified flying objects are concerned, these do exist. I agree with you that there have been a multitude of reliable sightings by eminently reliable persons, including, I believe, some noted persons. There have been sightings confirmed by radar as well as visually by numerous individuals, and I think the Air Force is ridiculous in the attitude, and they generally deny carte blanche the existence of UFOs. I think, however, that the somewhat screwballish element who tell about the messages from these people from space who have been to 1,001 planets, who have been to the North Pole beneath the pyramids of Egypt, cast, unfortunately, into disrepute the more serious elements such as NICAP, that's Major Keogh's organization, and the like. But you were saying before you divided contactees into one or two classes. I was wondering what was your idea on that score.
Well, I think there are the self-deceived, and then I think there are the deceiving. I think that there are, to classify that further, that there are the opportunists who seize on a current craze to sell a few books and make a few lectures at $1.50 a head. And then I think that there are in the group those who sincerely believe that they have had an experience, and it's some sort of a self-deception, perhaps rooted deep in the psychological nature of the individual.
Yes, of course, so many of the contactees fall in those who have telepathic projections within the confines of their mind. There are the astral projectionists. But I think you have made an excellent basic classification, which never occurred to me, of the deceived and the deceivers. Did you have any chance to read the 50-minute hour? I think it was written by Lindner. It was contained of five case histories psychiatrically, one of which was a very eminent physicist who became so deluded with his work with space that he believed that he was one of the lords of another planet. He wrote books made of maps of the geography of his imaginary planet, wrote about the law, the love life, the dynasties there, until he was finally cured. And this is an example of self-delusion. Reading that case history led me to believe that very possibly this may be more prevalent than we realize. I don't know.
Well, now, you know, there's another slight aspect to it, too. According to the findings of Dr. Ryan at Duke University, ESP, although often faked, probably faked 98% of the time, on the other 2% of the time, is legit. And it would be conceivable that somebody might have an ESP experience of some kind that would trip a lever. I think it would be a rather ungluing experience to have disembodied spirit or something appear to you from nowhere if you weren't expecting it or weren't attending a seance, and all of a sudden you heard a voice or saw something, and apparently, in at least a tiny number of cases, this legitimately happens. Well, now, if this were to happen to some individual, who knows what sort of a lever it could trip, and he could start thinking that he was lord of outer space, as you say, or almost anything.
In the Deceiver class, Ben, I have always thought that perhaps they could be divided basically into those who either make or hope to make a book. Number two, those who have some theme, whether it be political, philosophical, or religious, they wish to sell,
yes.
And they want to use these sources as a means of reaching this. And number three, those who wish to gain notoriety, have been perhaps small people to use that word all their life and see a chance to hit the headlines or hope to hit it. Are there any other classes that you can think of other than those basic three?
That seems to sum it up. There's one thing I wanted to ask you about, too, however. First, I want to put in a word for Bob and Stan Sayer. These are a couple of young guys. Let's see, where were we? I guess...
I was going to ask you one other thing, Ben, and one that, it seems to me back in 56 or thereabouts had the Moncar incident here. Do you remember it at all?
Oh, yes.
I think, did Long John call you on the phone that night to compare notes? I have the impression that he probably did.
He tried, and we were unable to get together. As a matter of fact, he was out here at the West Coast, and he was staying at the Statler, and he phoned me, and it just in the daytime to talk, and I've been wanting so much to meet him, and it just happened that at the time he phoned me, I was just up to my ears and doing things, and I came back, and I got his message on my call service, and by the time I got back to him, he had left and returned to the East, so I've never met Long John and never talked with him.
Oh, I know he was out, I think, the Giant Rock one year, the cover of the Tackle Convention, and I think in 56, I had the impression that when the Moncar incident was going on, he had called some station, I thought it was yours here, over the phone from New York to determine what had happened. That is the one where I believe the message had come from Mars, and at a certain time a ship was to...
Dick Miller, yeah.
Yeah, was it supposed to come over this station? Was there supposed to be a message, or I'm trying to think of the fact?
Yes. Dick Miller is associated with a high school teacher, a teacher of manual training in one of the high schools. And have you met Dick?
No, I haven't.
Very pleasant young guy. He has a job at one of the aircraft companies. He's an awfully nice young fellow. And the teacher associated with him is a man who is, I would say, around 50 or 55. Dick is probably in his 20s, late 20s. And they meet in Dick's house, and Dick then, so the story goes, allows his mind to be possessed by Moncar, who is presumably flying around someplace up above. And then Moncar, utilizing Dick's mind, speaks through Dick's mouth. And when Dick does this, his voice, he does a voice change. His voice is normally fairly high, and it seems to drop down lower, and it seems to become like an old man, you know, talks that way. And then this Moncar speaks with all the wisdom of the world, and of course knows everything that has ever taken place. He's got an answer for the Great Pyramids and Atlantis and you name it. So, of course, this is pretty tough stuff to swallow. But I went out and talked with Dick, and I was very much impressed by the young guy's sincerity. And so we went through a session with him, and in this private session, I spoke with Moncar. Moncar, of course, speaking through Dick Miller's mouth. And I said, well, now look, Moncar, you know, we respect you, old fellow, and all that sort of thing. But we would like to see some evidence of you. Will you arrange to appear over KFI so we can have a quick look at you some night? And Moncar, through Dick, agreed that he would. So we publicized it ahead of time, and it was decided that that Moncar would make his appearance above KFI, so we took a long microphone and we climbed up a ladder and we got up on the roof of the building up here. And of course, Moncar had specified the time and the date exactly to the minute and second. And so, and when Moncar was going to speak over our transmitter, he was going to come in over the airwaves. So we got up there and we waited for the time and the moment, and I'm sure that there were thousands of people who were just holding their breath, and frankly, I was, too. You know, you get up there and it suddenly becomes kind of real to you, you know. And needless to say, Monka had appointments elsewhere, and that was the end of that. But
amazing white story, as I recall, wasn't it?
Yes, it got quite a lot of publicity, and my feeling about Dick is, Dick Miller, is that he is completely sincere. I think he is perhaps one of the self-deceived, if anything.
Well, isn't this a little hard to tie in, though, with this, if this were to be accepted at face value, then it almost might be a case of possession, then, of Monka taking over, which is believing that he takes over his body and his voice. And I know Monk has made a lot of tapes since then. Do you think that actually something like this can happen without being feigned?
No.
That's why I put the sincere in quotes.
No, yes, I do. I think that a psychiatrist could point out to you any number of cases where a man believing he was someone else. Well, let me put it this way.
Three faces of Eve?
Yeah. You said it. That's the whole story right there. In fact, I think I read an article in Playboy magazine about hypnotism, and in that particular article it said that you could be hypnotized and told that you were Khrushchev, and you would immediately start talking like he does and acting like he does, or as close to it as you were able to come.
It might, oddly enough, if you go to the Nassau County Telephone Directory, you'll find me under two listings under classified as a lawyer and as a hypnotist.
Oh, that's one of my hobbies, yes. The two faces of Saint Germain.
at least two.
We have a product here, Jules, that I think you... From Al Pierce, Los Angeles 24. $3.50 to Al Pierce, Los Angeles 24.
Have any all-night markets here in L.A.? I can
sure.
You without a buy a box for me? I'm very hungry.
Oh, gosh, they are wonderful. No kidding. Well, let's see. I guess we've just about whipped the thing around the stump, Jules. I hope when you go back to New York, you'll give my regards to Long John. I've heard
sure he will.
So much about him over the years. How long has he been at that show, anyway?
Well, it used to be Long John's Almanac originally, and I think he started in August 1956 in the party line. It'll be 5 years in this August, I believe. And he's got the TV show now. It's kind of an hour show. It's originally a half hour. And I think it probably has the biggest listening audience for that time of night of any of the shows. He's been, I think, phenomenally successful.
Well, I've heard so much about him. And we've been at this one here for about 9 years. We started
that long?
In 51, yeah.
Has your general pattern of guests been along the same lines? Mm-hmm. Varied, I suppose.
Well, it's somewhat varied. We don't go as strongly on UFO as I gather that Long John does. We have a lot of UFO guests, but we also have a great many other things, too.
Well, he doesn't he's quite varied. I think it's a very small percentage now. It's just a safe number you can have, I guess. Isn't that about it?
Yes, and once you've talked to all the contactees, you might have them back a second time a year later. And then you've just about... Where's there to go from there? You've just about had it, you see.
Yeah.
And, the contactees and then the others, like Kehoe and so on.
Have you had Kehoe on here?
I've been trying to get him for ages, but when he's out here, I'm not available, and when he's not, I can't get him out, so I haven't been able to...
You're very dedicated. Yeah. How about ESP? Do you have much on that here?
Oh, tons of it, yes.
What's your conclusion?